This episode of the Android Central podcast is brought to you by QuickBooks and QuickBooks Self-Employed. It can help separate your business and personal expenses so you can quickly track what you spent for work and what you spent on yourself. Plus, it'll take the guesswork out of your estimated federal quarterly taxes. So come tax time, you'll know how much to set aside for Uncle Sam and how much stays in your pocket. Try QuickBooks Self-Employed and get 50% off at tryselfemployed.com/android. Hey there, everybody, and welcome to the Android Central Podcast. It is episode number 240 for Friday, June 12th, 2015. Welcome to the show. I'm Phil Nickinson. I'm still kind of looking in all the wrong places for all you, for everybody watching the video, because my office is still mostly put together now and rearranged. And so welcome back. Here we go again. If it's your first time joining us, we do this every week. Thereabouts. Actually, when was the last time we took a week off? It's been a long time.
It's been a really long time.
look at my face. It's been a long time. Alex, you have no lower third.
Oh, you see, I'm
out. Oh, boo.
We were talking about taking weeks off. I've actually taken the past 3 or 4 weeks off this podcast, so I'm out of practice here.
So for those of you who are watching Alex but have no idea who he is, because his name's not on the screen, Alex Doby.
Hi. As I stumble around to get my lower third on screen and work out where everything is in Google Plus.
Rookie mistake. Yeah, you've been in like China and Taiwan and, well, that's...
Briefly in Dubai, I guess, for LA.
Well, now you're just showing off.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll let you talk about that in a minute. We got Russell Holly with us.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm really good.
You look good.
A generally positive week, I think.
I think so. Well, I mean, that's just from, you know, boss standpoint, but I'm happy. That's really what's important, right?
Yeah.
Phil's happy. Andrew Martinick, who always looks like that, even when he is happy.
Yeah, I have a very narrow range of emotions, if you haven't told me. I figured that out by now.
What was it? It was his Galaxy S6 video, and I just, like, wanted to poke him through the computer with a stick.
Yeah, he said, I just want to tickle Andrew. Yeah. While he's so you can actually smile when he says something.
It was worse when we were in New York for the LG G4, and I, you know, Derek Kessler's in the hotel room with me working on stuff, and it's just Derek's personality. If you know him, it makes sense. Go watch the video. But like the whole time, I'm throwing things at him and making faces and like anything it works because it's
deadpan
him.
Delivery all the time.
It works because it's him. If I sounded like that, it would not be good. I'm not sure it's good the way I sound now.
I'm imagining you with Derek's voice now.
And, see?
Yeah.
I don't want to do it because that's not nice, but you know what I mean.
I think Derek did a really good job with the Virtu phone he reviewed this week, especially with the videos. That was really cool.
If you haven't seen it, go watch and read the whole review. I think it's a really good review. Derek, he'd been fighting for months. The backstory for this review, if you don't know what a Virtu is, it's a $9,000 Android smartphone.
And that's the bottom end.
Yeah.
It goes up from there.
That's the cheap version. He had been, you know, after them for months to review this thing. And it's not just like a, you know, hey, here's a $600, even, you know, with the GS6, here's a $1,000 smartphone, go use it for a month or whatever. Like, he had to talk to these guys for a long time. And then they send somebody to you to deliver it. We should have had Derek on to talk about it. They don't just, like, ship it to your head. I mean, it costs $9,000. It costs as much as a car. So they, you know, shipped it, or they hand deliver it to him. And then you have to go through this whole setup process and the concierge, and it's ridiculous and ridiculously expensive. And there's no reason anyone in a million years should ever buy this thing. Right. Right.
I mean, unless you're the kind of person who just has that kind of money laying around, right.
Yeah.
From reading the review, the hardware is only part of it, and there are actually some kind of flaws with the hardware, where it's dealing with 2014 hardware and a battery that isn't so great.
And a really bad camera,
Yeah, the service layer is what they're selling here, the concierge service and all this other stuff they have built in, where it's essentially, here is an app to help you find rich people things to do, and here is a concierge to help you find which rip your fancy jacket, where to find a
chances
tailor.
Chances are you have people to do that for you at that point, but you know.
Well, no, I think maybe it's that line. It's that line between having a person and not. That's who this phone is for.
I don't know. I mean, like, and part of it's just because, believe it or not, I'm kind of shy about it. But the last thing I want to do is call somebody on the phone to get help with something. Like, that's why we have all these apps. That's why we have OpenTable, so I don't have to spend 30 seconds out of my life to make a reservation.
Well, you can, you don't have to call them. You can do it over text and stuff.
Right,
a,
like, that's true.
Text and email too.
Yeah.
Or just use an app and do it myself.
You know, that is an interesting point, though, because all these apps are kind of, they're bringing things to you that normally you would need a personal assistant or a concierge or something to handle that for you. And now you don't need to do that. You know, you don't have to go down to the hotel concierge when you're out of town to go talk to them about something. You can call your own car, you can call your own food, or you can make reservations or get tickets or whatever, just with a handful of apps, which is, you know, that's good. You don't all need a $9,000 phone.
Sure, and I think that the price of the concierge service, just aside from the phone, after the first year is like $3,000 a year.
Oh, is it? I missed that part. Yeah. Wow.
So, I mean,
it's 24/7.
It's 24/7, and it's effectively anything, right? You can ask them for help within reason, you would assume.
It's a lot of money.
You know, and it's funny because then you see all these celebrities, and what phone do they carry? Probably an iPhone 6.
Yeah.
You know, not a fancy one, not a crazy one that they turned it gold or anything like that. They have an off-the-shelf iPhone 6.
You don't really see it as a celebrity phone, though, do you? You think you see it as more like a high-powered businessman phone kind of
thing.
Yeah.
It reminds me of, I was telling my wife, because she was like, what is this thing? And I had to remember the movie. It was back in Ocean's 13. Ocean's 13. But actually, and then I remember they actually use Samsung in that.
Yes.
Pacino's character wanted the new Samsung phone.
Solid gold phone. Yeah. Solid gold Samsung candy bar phone.
Yeah. But I mean, Vertu is exactly what I thought of. And in fact, if you've ever been to Vegas, is it Between the Wind and Encore where they have the Vertu store?
Yeah, it's that mall between Wind and Encore where all the fancy shops are.
Yeah, and it's down in kind of the end where you don't see a lot of people because it's like all these shops. Because
it's
a
friggin' $10,000 right. Phone store.
I mean, by all these shops that have no windows and they just have like private entrances and stuff like that, yeah. That's where the Vertu store is.
And actually, funny story, who did we see there last year but HTC chairwoman and now CEO Xiao Wang walking through that?
That's true.
Yeah.
Well, they were all staying there. Yeah.
They were all staying, and also she's worth like $8 billion. So.
Does that as well.
Afford a Vertu if she wanted to jump ship there.
Yeah.
That's true. Oh, man. So that's a fun review. If you haven't read it, go read it. Absolutely. In fact, just go to phones, like phones.es / Vertu. I gave it a nice little short link because it deserved it, I think.
Yep.
So there's that. What else have we been up to? Actually, let's talk about it now because it's kind of breaking news today, and I haven't even been following it because I decided to blow up my computer today instead of doing real work. Russell, you've been following this. We now have a YouTube gaming channel thing.
So later this summer, we are going to have a standalone YouTube app that is just for games. It is specifically for watching games and eventually broadcasting games that you are playing onto YouTube. It is without any holds barred whatsoever YouTube saying, hey, let's do this thing that Twitch has been doing. Which is weird because YouTube has technically been doing this exact same thing for way longer than Twitch has been around. It's just always been like limited to certain kinds of YouTube accounts and limited to certain quality YouTube accounts and things like that. And so now we're seeing this entirely dedicated games-only version of YouTube, basically, where people will be able to go and sort by game. They'll be able to search for specific titles, of which I think they said out of the gate they're planning on supporting 25,000 different games with a YouTube organization list that are different both in design and in structure from what we expect from normal YouTube. So like it'll be organized by, you know, live streams and let's plays and things like that. They could not be making it any more clear that they want gamers to come and do this whole thing separate from normal YouTube.
How is it different than Twitch?
So far, the thing that'll make it different from Twitch is that, you know, it's YouTube, so if you are broadcasting, you'll be able to record in the highest possible quality and have it stay immediately. And while we haven't seen if there are, you know, going to be prices associated with those kind of, like, high-end accounts or anything like that, that's Twitch's business model. They have kind of a free system where anyone can go in and do stuff, but then if you want to store your videos on Twitch for any amount of time, or if you want to store certain quality videos on Twitch for any amount of time, you have to pay for those other accounts.
Am I going to use this? Am I going to have to use this?
I'm going to use this, and I will probably end up using it for you, and I will probably make Andrew use it, and I will definitely make Jerry use it. But no, there's a good chance that you probably won't use it to do much more than spectate.
I was thinking about this sort of in the context of Periscope this week, as you, and you were using Periscope really well, Fracy. This morning, I was playing around with it at a baseball game earlier this week. And, I mean, again, Periscope's not doing anything that Google and YouTube haven't done either, right? I mean, live streaming goes way back. I remember, you know, the early days of Kick when Kick first came out. But for as good as Google is at this stuff, these other companies have gotten a foot in the door and seem like a really focused foot, maybe is the...
Yeah. Well, I mean, what Twitch and Periscope both have in common that have taken over features that, like you said, Google has definitely had, is how easy it is to set up those things on these other services. Periscope is two button presses, and I'm broadcasting live, and anyone who is doing things can watch it. Where if I go to do that on YouTube, it's straight up like a 20-minute process.
And no, like,
if
weird.
If I want to broadcast.
Yeah, no weird, like, having to join some other group. Right. I mean, it's based off Twitter, so
and
it just works.
Twitch has been, you know, the plug and play kind of setup. If you had the appropriate PC hardware, or if you had the box to plug in to the previous generation consoles, and now it's baked into the current generation consoles, where you just say, you know, I can say out loud in my living right now, you know, Xbox Twitch, you know, start a Twitch stream. And it just starts broadcasting whatever game I'm playing immediately. I don't have to push a single button.
Is it going to work with Google's new stuff now, or is it just going to be...
The YouTube apps are already on both of those platforms. Mm-hmm. They're already on the PlayStation, and they're already on the Xbox. And the broadcasting capabilities aren't special for Twitch. I mean, Xbox had been talking about broadcasting on YouTube way back when they first rolled out the console. So I have... every faith that this is going to be a, you know, update to the software on behalf of YouTube, and that feature will be enabled later this summer. So, I mean, there are no technical reasons for that to not be there.
It almost seems like this kind of area was Google's to lose with YouTube, right? Because YouTube's been on consoles for ages. Live streaming isn't exactly a new thing. Of course, there are reports and rumors last year of Google wanting to actually buy Twitch outright, but it seems like these other providers have almost come out of nowhere and kind of beaten Google at their own game with this.
Yeah,
and now they're just sort of playing catch up.
That's exactly what it was. I mean, for each of these services, Periscope, Twitch, you know, Meerkat, all of these services, these are things that Google has had the technical ability to do for years, but it's a multi-step, complicated process that often requires way more work or technical know-how than is worth on behalf of the person doing the streaming. I mean, I can use my existing hardware to broadcast to YouTube Live for all of my game hardware, but it's way more work than it is to just start up a Twitch stream even before the apps were natively built into the consoles. So I mean, this is entirely about Google taking way too long, or just thinking that it wasn't a priority to make it easy to do these things.
Which, again, is kind of weird, given Hangouts on Air, and for even as good as that is, there's still a little bit of barrier to entry there, right? I mean, it's not the most difficult thing in the world to set up, but you still got to work at it a little bit.
And it's taken time to get Hangouts on Air to the way it is. I remember how janky it was when it first arrived, and I think under a different name back in the original Google Plus days a long time ago. But it takes time from getting something that's functional to get something that works well every time, especially when you're talking about streaming, which is a very tricky technical area.
So later this summer, it's going to be free, you said?
It will most likely be free. They haven't said anything about pricing or anything like that. We're going to hear more this summer. I would honestly be surprised that we don't hear more about it at E3 next week. I don't know that YouTube has any specific presentations, but it would not shock me if Microsoft and Sony came out on stage during their presentations and said, hey, by the way, there's this YouTube gaming thing, and we're going to support that as well.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I thought YouTube had said that they had some kind of presence at E3, but obviously before...
Yeah, I think they always have a presence at E3.
Before they announced this, they couldn't exactly say that.
And Microsoft is going to be the interesting one, given all the ecosystem back and forth between those two on this. You know, given there still isn't a proper YouTube app for Windows Phone and all this other stuff we've had going on between the two of them.
And while that's true, their YouTube app for Xbox was like a day one thing, and it's always worked really, really well. So it could just be that the Xbox team works better with the Microsoft guy or with the YouTube guys. I honestly have no idea.
Yeah, it's all the questions I have about that, I think. Tell you what, let's take a quick break, and when we come back, I want to talk Apple and WWDC. And I might say some dirty words. Oh, stop it. Hang on. We'll be right back. What does it mean when every commercial bank in the Fortune 500 relies on Red Hat for enterprise software? Or that every department in the executive branch of the U.S. government does too? Or how about every airline in the Fortune Global 500? It means that more than 90% of all the companies in the Fortune 500 understand the value that supported enterprise open source software can bring to their business. If the value of open source is the rapid innovation, freedom, and interoperability that comes with community-powered technology, then the value of Red Hat is taking responsibility for that technology, testing it, enhancing security, and certifying that it will work in your data center. So what is Red Hat doing that is making such a big difference? Well, it's simple. Simple, but not easy. They make sure that you can get all the benefits of open source without the risk of doing it all yourself. No one else can make that promise, much less keep it. So visit redhat.com to see how they can help your enterprise with application development, storage, and cloud computing. Red Hat, different for the sake of better technology. Okay, you ready? Everybody go get a drink. Everybody top off. So dub this week, all the new Apple stuff, iOS 9, OS X, what version is it?
El Capitan.
Did they give it a number or no? Did they just say El Capitan?
Were they up to 11 now?
No, I think it's 10.
If only I was running a Mac and could look right in front of me.
Mm.
Actually, I do want to say, before we even talk about any of the stuff that they actually announced,
yeah,
the intro video that they did with Bill Hader was freaking
hilarious. I still have to see that. I missed the first half hour or so.
So good.
Yeah.
You put a lot of time and money into that.
Of all the stuff in the keynote, I mean, it kind of sounded like the last one to me. Like, if you are immersed in the Apple ecosystem, you're going to get a lot out of this, and there's some really good stuff there. But for me, like, I use the OS. I don't really, you know, I don't use their mail apps. I don't use Safari if I can avoid it. So it sounds like I'm not going to get that much out of it. The metal stuff sounds really interesting to me. Baking their graphic stuff, bringing it over from iOS and putting it in OS X is kind of exciting, especially if you're using a laptop, right? Can you imagine? I mean, like, we might actually get battery life back.
It's exciting. It's going to be exciting if app developers besides Apple start using it. We're all aware of how certain apps like Chrome and, you know, Adobe's another one that doesn't perform particularly well. A lot of that has to do with the way the rendering system works. If those guys are on board, then it's going to be interesting. We all know how Chrome impacts battery life on a Mac. Maybe Metal can help there a little bit. But like anything, it's going to take time.
And actually, we've seen some, I think it was Google Plus posts from people today talking about how, I get they're always working on Chrome and stuff, but they are actually actively working to make Chrome better on OS X. And that's super important if you've ever used Chrome on OS X. It can get a little beefy. But probably the biggest news for us was Apple Music, which in some ways is brand new and in some ways is just kind of like, all right, here's another music service, right?
Well,
or Ping Part 2.
They're pretty much saying, we did this Ping thing, we keep doing this iTunes thing, we have this iTunes Match thing, and we also have iTunes Radio, and then remember we bought Beats. Okay, now all of that is all just one super app where you can do all this stuff, and, you know, it makes sense, but it also was, the announcement was, it all's coming together into one app more than we're announcing something that's entirely new that you've never seen before.
Right.
This is all basic stuff.
$10 a month, basically get anything and everything in the library. I think Apple's
bucks for a family of five.
Yeah, and that to me is really interesting because my wife uses iTunes for her music. I'm not against the idea of paying one price for all of us to have everything instead of, you know, the $8 a month I'm paying Google Music, or need to cancel Spotify again, I think. At least until I get fed up with Google Play Music again. I don't know. I mean, Russell, is that tempting for you guys? Is your family split like mine is?
Well, yeah, there definitely is a split there, especially, you know, this Christmas I got both of my girls' iPods specifically because the music was easier to manage over there, and music was like the dominant thing they wanted to do, and there really wasn't a convenient music player for Android that wasn't a phone. And no matter how many times I tell people, they don't seem to get that I didn't want to get them phones. But the family plan thing is a huge deal, and really something I'm considering using as leverage to move away from Google Play Music, because it's a big deal, and their music libraries are so similar now that it's not even a matter of what music they'll have. It's, you know, how I can access it and how much it's going to cost me.
And I mean, the family plan makes it a good deal after the first person. I mean, you're talking about 50% more for 2 through 5 people is a big deal. When, I mean, you can get promotional discounts. You'll get a month free, or you can get $8 a month on Google Play Music. But I'm talking about $15 for up to 5 people. I think the best that they offered with Beats, they had AT&T had some kind of family deal that was like $20 or $25 for everybody in your family plan. And Spotify has one too. I think it's $25 or $30.
Oh, do they? I didn't realize that.
Yeah, they have a family plan.
I mean, one thing that's going to keep me from possibly switching, and I have no idea because we haven't seen the app or anything yet on Android, but Chromecast to me is a big deal. Sonos integration for me is a big deal. And now, and I get that this is a niche thing, but Android Auto for me is a big deal. Like
you know that the Sonos integration is going to
happen. I would imagine so, yeah.
Sonos and iOS have been working together really well for a while.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me to see Chromecast in there.
And this is, this is kind of uncharted territory for Apple. This is uncharted territory for Apple. We haven't seen how they behave on Android. And of course, on Mac and on Windows, it's all about interacting with the Apple ecosystem. They don't play nice with Google. If all of a sudden they're acting on Google's platform, how much are they going to integrate with the way Android works and the way the Google services work that are so integral to Android?
Yeah,
it's also going to be interesting to see how, if they can get behind Android's design language, or whether it is basically just the iOS design language plastered on top of Android. How much are they into material design? Are we going to see any of that, or is it just going to be a carbon copy of the iOS app in the same way that iTunes kind of works that way on Windows?
Yeah, are we going to see, are you going to be able to sign up for your subscription in the app through Google Play and have a recurring payment through Google Play for your subscription to Apple?
If they're smart, yes. What's that?
Can you imagine being the guy at Apple who works on the Android app for iTunes Music? Like, seriously, I need to talk to that individual. I'm sure it's like, it can't be more than like 5 people. I need to talk to this human.
And I know I've said something sort of like this a ways back, but if Apple's smart, they will make this the best damn music app on Android.
Yeah. No,
I hope they pull a Microsoft.
Yeah.
They really should.
Make this something that people want. I mean, look, this is going to be, it's going to be a huge deal just because it's going to be the default music on iOS now. That is a huge deal for a whole lot of people are going to use this. If I was, you know, Spotify and Pandora, just for that reason alone, it doesn't matter how bad it is. It's default. It's automatically on there.
They have people using that app already, even if they just load music on their phone or just using their iTunes purchases, and then there's this subscription thing they could get into later. Like that has to kill Spotify.
Yeah,
see that happening.
That's a ton of people already there. You really want to screw with people at Google, you make the best damn music app on Android and then give them a reason to switch to it.
And they can. I mean, there was a time when iTunes was the best music player on my desktop. And that was like the thing that I used, because everything else that I tried to use was just was really bad, and it didn't do things the way that I wanted them to. And so iTunes was like the music player. And then They got kind of crazy with the iPod, and I moved away from it. But you know, there is every chance that they could turn around and make this just the best music player on Android, and that would be cool.
I think there are a couple of angles here. The first angle is, yeah, wanting to make the best music player and lure Android users into the Apple ecosystem, and you know, eventually over time lure them into the hardware ecosystem as well. The other side of it is maybe in the same way they did with Android, they did with Windows, they're going to go a little bit over the top. They're going to see pushing their design language and pushing the Apple experience over making a really great Android music app.
Yeah. Here's my question, though. Does Google Play Music, as it stands today, does it feel like a default app to you? And maybe it depends on the phone you have, but because all these phones come with two music players now, right?
Yeah, and if you have a G4 or a GS6 or the latest, Droid whatever, it doesn't feel like a default app because the default music player out of the box is something else.
Right. It's just it's this other Google app, and not unimportant, and again, not good. I use it every single day. But yeah, there's a big difference between being the music app and being a music app.
I mean, you could say that about everything. There's two contacts apps, two calendar apps, two music apps, two galleries. It's the same argument of why it makes the experience really, really cumbersome when you take a GS6 out of the box and you have two of everything as soon as the Google Apps update.
Let's not even get started on gallery and photos.
Yeah. Oh, no, you've missed the past 2 weeks on that.
You missed that.
And if you haven't listened, when I talked to Anil from the photos team at Google at I.O. a couple weeks ago, I mean, he said, yeah, it's still going to live separately. I mean, we're
beating the dead horse on that. You really missed an opportunity to kind of pick him up and shake him when he said that, by the way.
You know, he is a much bigger man than I am.
He's a big guy.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not that tall. He is both tall and big. So, no, and I don't know. Alex, give me your 30-second take on photos.
Interesting. I was kind of in a unique position using it because it kicked into life on my G4 right as I was, you know, going to be away in Asia for 2 weeks. So my experience with it has really been, you know, occasionally backing stuff up to it, scrolling through and seeing a bunch of old stuff I think you guys talked about last week. The interesting thing for me has been actually using it as part of this trip and seeing stuff build up and eventually bring back stories and stuff the way that the old Google Plus Photos app used to. And I think it's getting there. It's still kind of annoyingly automatic, at the same time annoyingly manual. The automatic stuff just isn't quite good enough to, you know, it gets tripped up by stuff like time zone changes and location still isn't where it needs to be. And if you use it on a plane, then, you know, onboard Wi-Fi confuses the hell out of it. For example, coming on the way back last week, it had, you know, Google Maps thought that I was in Incheon in South Korea heading due north into North Korea, which I was not. There are problems there, and I had a bunch of photos from the plane looking out the window tagged as in South Korea, which is not good. And of course that feeds into Google Photos because Google Photos just looks at the GPS information in the metadata. So there are parts of it that some of the automatic stuff is really good. Like Auto Awesome is still there, obviously under a different name. But I think for as good as Google is at dealing with large amounts of data, this particular part of Google still gets tripped up by just the sheer amount of stuff that it has to deal with and all the various parts of Google that need to talk to each other to make it work. That was longer than 30 seconds, but there you go.
Periscope had me in the middle of the country somewhere the other day. It was a little weird. I mean, look, that any of this works in any way, shape, or form is still kind of magical to me, but I feel you. And especially, I mean, we've talked a lot about tagging photos and geotagging and stuff over the past week, and yeah, I didn't launch into the Apple privacy stuff, but maybe we should now. That was a weird segue. It's kind of a forced segue. Wait, look, I have a very public job. I'm gonna pull up the chair and sit down for this one. I have a very public job.
Gather around, kids.
Yeah, and for a long time have kind of balanced this work-life thing to varying degrees of success, right? So I get the need for privacy. And again, thank you everybody for not, you know, stalking me too hard. Not that you should or want to, but, you know, it's absolutely possible. Every now and then I would put out a photo that still had geotagging turned on, or, you know, maybe a picture of my house that's recognizable enough or something like that. It's one of the reasons I'm glad I'm in an office now. So, I mean, to back up, if you haven't heard, one of the big value propositions for iOS 9 and Apple in general going forward is privacy. We don't want your data. You know, we don't move your data through the cloud. We don't have it on our servers. We don't want it. That in and of itself, I think, is a good thing. That is not bad. That is laudable. And it's probably a not the worst way to go about business if that's what you want to do. Google, meanwhile, from the get-go, go back to the founder's letter, you know, at the time of the IPO. I've linked to that a few times lately, and read it and believe what you want to believe. And to me, you have to balance that with what you actually see from a company versus what they say. But from the beginning, they said, we're going to organize the world's data. We're going to take all this data and do some really cool stuff with it. And to me, that's a good thing, but that also means that they have to. It is as imperative for them to be careful with that data. Otherwise, their money goes away and the company will cease to exist. So when Apple says that, you know, we value your privacy as if nobody else can possibly value it, even if they're using, you know, data that, by the way, you opt in to give them, they're not taking anything from you involuntarily. You know, Apple not taking your data is no more inherently good than Google saying, we're going to take this data that you are voluntarily giving us and do some really cool stuff with it. You know, like, does that make sense?
I think you nailed it when you said that if people stop trusting Google with their data, then Google's revenue streams go away. Apple knows this. It's in Apple's financial interest to make people scared of the way Google collects data, and that's why they're doing what they're doing.
But here's something that's kind of an interesting counter to this. The way that they're doing this whole, you know, everything is going to be local, nothing's going to be in the cloud, we're not watching, we don't care, it's not going to be tied to your account. You are a hardware company that wants everyone to be using all of your products all the time, and you just publicly admitted that none of your things are going to be talking to one another. What is the point of using your service? Why would I bother with doing searches on Siri and relying on history searches in Siri on my iPhone if I then pick up my iPad and none of that information is there? Or if I go to my MacBook and none of that information is there?
Do we know that that's going to be the case? Or are
it
they
has
just
to be the case. There's no way to identify it by your account, which means there's no way to move it from device to device. That information couldn't go from one device to another device based on the explanation they've given of how that service works.
Right. They're either lying about what data they're moving between devices or the experience is going to be really bad. And honestly, anybody who's used Apple's cloud services knows that they're not good at making that data transition between devices anyway.
I'm really curious to see what comes out of all that. I mean, if they're able to get anywhere near, and if you haven't seen all the WWDC coverage, go to iMore and you know, check it out. Because there's a lot of, I don't even care about the Me Too stuff. I don't care about the, you know, Google's done this already, Android's done this already. I'm really curious to see how good these services are without, you know, or with a different sort of data than the way Google's doing things, you know, and if they manage to do it in a way that makes people want to use it. I'm not the right person to tell you that because I don't use both services. We're Android guys here.
If you think about it on a fundamental level about what needs to be done for mm-hmm. something like Google Now to work as well as it does, and, you know, we know it's not perfect. It makes a lot of mistakes, just like algorithms in Google Photos make mistakes and, you know, search results aren't always great. And that's with the power of Google's insane computation engines on their servers and crunching all this information. How much do you really think can be done with just, you know, happening locally on your phone? I mean, the greatest thing about internet-connected services is that the processing doesn't happen on your phone, and it can all happen remotely, and then you just get the benefit through a very lightweight Google search app that can then just pull down the important parts.
Let me ask you this, because another kind of tangent from all this is privacy dead? Let me just ask you. I mean, is it something we should even try to obtain anymore in this digital world? Russell?
Absolutely. Yeah? I mean, it's not dead, and it's absolutely something you should try to attain because it's an important thing. But there's kind of two things about the weird global conversation that's happening right now. The first is that there's a huge difference between privacy and personal responsibility, and a lot of people screw that up. And the second is that you are exactly as private as you choose to be, which means you have to pay attention to the services that you are using. There are a lot of companies, it's not in their best interest to make you more secure because they make money off of your data. It doesn't really matter what company we're talking about. That's, you know, they want your data. I'm not necessarily talking about Google or Yelp or, you know, any of those companies. But, you know, you have to pay attention to make yourself more secure. And even then, it's not a guarantee, but it's a really strong foot forward.
What do you think, Alex? Is this a different conversation for you, living in a different part of the world than us?
No, we still deal with the same services over here. There are slightly different rules. The big one in Europe, I guess, that's been in the news lately is the right to be forgotten, which has caused all kinds of issues with Google, and it's still ongoing with all the countries like France now.
Well, actually, yeah, France just told them, I think today, that you need to expand it to everything.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, that there are obviously two sides to the argument. I think Russell pretty much nailed it with the sort of personal side of that, though. Most people don't really have that much on Google search they would want to hide from the world. But yeah, I think there is a personal responsibility aspect to it. And I think it's almost like an inevitable side effect with the way so many things are connected right now, and that there's so much connectivity between those connected services that it is difficult for a lot of normal people who don't do what we do to keep track of all this stuff and to be you know, aware to read all the license agreements of everything that they use. I think there's a question of personal responsibility, but also the fact that, is it reasonable to assume that people can be clued into all the stuff that they submit their data to when services like this are becoming an increasingly normal and necessary part of everyday life?
I think you touched on an important point there, that the fact that Google does its best through things like Google Takeout and the security dashboard and things like that, showing you what's connected, where things are going, I think that's way more powerful than having a company that just says that they don't want your data. Now, that's putting all the onus back on the user to decide now or to think, you know, now they're thinking, oh, when I use an iPhone or I use... was it like the black phone or whatever, you know, everything's super secure. Do they just all of a sudden stop caring about what they do? Now, what happens when they download the Yelp app from the App Store? Yelp's definitely looking at your data.
That
just, even though Apple says Apple may not care, Yelp cares, Foursquare cares, the Google search app that you download on your iPhone definitely cares.
That gets to the conclusion I kind of came to the other night, that, yeah, this phone right here cannot, you know, get any of my data. That's fine. But the minute I connect it to the internet, doesn't matter how, whether it's Wi-Fi, whether it's a mobile operator, because for damn sure the operators are tracking everything you do. Make no mistake about that. You know, same thing for your ISP. I mean, the minute you launch a single app, anything you put into that app, whether it's your name or whether you check in places or, you know, look up what you want to eat on OpenTable, like every little thing you do, they're tracking it, and for good reason. Tracking in data and all that stuff, it in and of itself is not an evil thing, as long as it's being used for good purposes. Now, we can, you know, have discussions all day long and argue over whether that ultimately is good, but at the same time, it's up to me to decide whether to use all this stuff. I think privacy is important. I think, you know, security, hands down, nobody's arguing that. Nobody's saying privacy in and of itself is bad. But at some point, the minute you pick up one of these phones and agree to use it, you are saying, all right, I get it. A lot of my life is going to be in this, and a lot of my life is going to be in the apps that I'm using. And they're going to know that. And you kind of have to accept that, don't you?
Well, kind of. I mean, there is such a thing as a dark design pattern, you know, where we have app developers who are being less than honest, and we've run into these problems in the past where app developers are being less than honest, and you know, to Apple's credit, the ability to you know, the app permission system that is in iOS has made it a lot easier to implement a dark design pattern on Android than it ever did on iOS, and that's being fixed in Android M, which is good, but it also means that there's a billion devices out there right now, you know, that could potentially, if you're not paying attention, cause you to fall victim to this dark design pattern, and that's, you know, that's not great, but it does fall a little bit under, you know, personal responsibility. I mean, it is something that Google works pretty constantly at to make sure that it doesn't happen, but it does still occasionally happen, and, you know, that is, you know, it's we're talking about a fraction of a percent, but it's something worth noting.
I think getting back to Apple and the way they've presented this over the past week, I mean, the cynic in me says that this is probably more about Apple presenting this sort of PR pitch as them as the safe guardians of your data, whereas and portraying Google in a negative light, and actually, like I was saying before, if people don't trust Google with their data, people stop giving Google their data, that is, you know, a disadvantage for Google. It's hard to view this for me in any kind of context besides Apple's ecosystem war with Google. And being the gigantic corporation that they are, they always care more about your money than you. Of course, that's true of everyone, but it seems to me like this comes across as more of an ecosystem play, more of a PR play than anything to do with genuine concern about users.
Right, because it comes down to Russell's earlier point of, if they really did care about the best possible user experience, you can easily argue that the best experience moving between devices is if Apple holds all of that data and syncs it between everything and exactly. offers you services in which continuity handoffs between devices work really well. All of your content can be moved around. You know, you can pick up a new phone and it works just like the other one without any relearning. That is, you know, not very arguably the best experience. And Apple's throwing that out the door in order to have this PR stance that they don't want your data. And they could easily say, we do want your data, but only to make our services better for you and not to sell it or anything like that, which, of course, is the Google standpoint.
Exactly, yeah. If they were to do that, they would be taking the exact same approach as Google.
Right.
And the alternative is that it syncs exactly the same and your history is available across your MacBook and your iPhone and your iPad, and Apple's lying about it. I mean, right. either one is acceptable. And honestly, I would, as weird as it sounds, I would prefer that. You know, because that experience is useful to be able to search for something like in Apple Maps and then open up your MacBook and access that search history. That's an important thing to have for users, and to hide behind privacy as the excuse for not offering that, I think, is just bad.
And there are kind of ways around that. They sort of have a workaround for that problem with I think, is it called continuity? Is that the name?
Yeah.
That only works on local networks. You have
that's only local, right. Though, but it's kind of a workaround. You can see why, you know, how you can kind of get around some of the issues of transporting stuff off to a faraway server by doing everything locally. But of course, you can't do everything locally.
I'm real curious to see how it all shakes out, and I completely agree. I think it's... I don't think they... It's not that they don't care about privacy. If you watched Phil Schiller on John Gruber's talk show, was it Tuesday night, Wednesday night, I forget when it was. Yeah, really good candid talk from him. And I think it's obvious that they care about privacy, but the marketing speak, yeah. Just it's more of the same, especially from Schiller. Okay, that's my two cents on that. We all need a hug now.
We do all need a hug now.
All right, I'll tell you what. Let's take one more break. When we come back, we will answer some of your questions and then maybe have a little cool news on that front. We'll see. Hang on. Be right back. What does it mean when every commercial bank in the Fortune 500 relies on Red Hat for enterprise software, or that every department in the executive branch of the U.S. government does too? Or how about every airline in the Fortune Global 500? It means that more than 90% of all the companies in the Fortune 500 understand the value that supported enterprise open source software can bring to their business. If the value of open source is the rapid innovation, freedom, and interoperability that comes with community-powered technology, then the value of Red Hat is taking responsibility for that technology, testing it, enhancing security, and certifying that it will work in your data center. So what is Red Hat doing that is making such a big difference? Well, it's simple. Simple, but not easy. They make sure that you can get all the benefits of open source without the risk of doing it all yourself. No one else can make that promise, much less keep it. So visit redhat.com to see how they can help your enterprise with application development, storage, and cloud computing. Red Hat, different for the sake of better technology. And back we are. Oh, hey, by the way, Russell has a really cool toy this week.
Ew.
Almost forgot.
It's the Dell Venue 10 7000.
Dell. I got to work on that name.
Please hire someone to name things for you.
Yes.
I'll do it for free.
I don't care who it is. Just.
What would you call it, Andrew?
You just take the 7000 off of it. It would be a great idea.
Did Russell just hang up on us by dropping it? That is awesome.
He dropped it on the keyboard.
Russell just disappeared from the podcast when he dropped it. See how long it takes him to get back.
I mean, like Dell just names things.
Hi, Russell.
I dropped the tablet on my finger.
they name things like a SKU number that they would have in an internal system.
Yeah.
And they like print that on the box.
I'm not
saying that you need like crazy marketing names like Android phones in 2012 and 2013, but dang, just drop the 7000.
Anyway, so how's this tablet?
Super great as long as you're not trying to open it and then drop it on your keyboard and close all of your Chrome tabs. But yeah, so, you know, we have had, there's hundreds of different keyboards for tablets to try and take tablets and make them more productive, and they've been around forever, and I've used, gosh, dozens of them, and they're really all terrible. But this one is just super cool. Like, it's this Dell tablet that splits out into two pieces. And you've got like these speakers that go all the way around that sound really nice. And this part is really just a bigger version of the Dell 7, the Venue 7 that you and I both looked at, running 5.0.2. And it's really nice. I mean, despite being bigger, the screen still looks really super good. But the keyboard is this Bluetooth keyboard that doesn't have a battery. It only receives power when it's connected to the tablet.
Oh,
and as soon as you connect it to the tablet, the tablet recognizes it and goes, okay, we're connecting the tablet, we're connecting the keyboard immediately, and it just immediately starts working. And the key layout is phenomenal. I mean, it has all of your... Right, and there's a touchpad which puts a mouse on the screen and lets you go around and scroll. It's you know, you can use it like a laptop where you don't have to reach out and poke the screen, but you've got all of the Android keys, including a launcher button and a search button. And they all, for the most part, work inside of the different apps. I've only been messing with it for a couple of hours, but so far I am really, really impressed. And Phil, you know how your only real complaint about the Venue 7 was that it was kind of hard to hold sometimes?
Yeah, yeah.
This whole putting a giant bar on the one side for you to wrap your hand around really eliminates that.
You know, and that's something that Lenovo has done with its tablets, because they put a like a laptop battery style cylindrical battery on the side, and it ends up, you know, they put a kickstand in there and stuff like that too. So, I mean, other than looking funky, it makes a lot of sense.
Have you found landscape use, Russell, just outside of the whole docking aspect? Because I guess you still got regular bezels on the side, but if you're holding something where the center of, where all the weight is at this thing, it's either at the top or bottom, that's going to get a bit awkward maybe if you're using it in landscape.
So it gets a little uncomfortable, but it's actually, because the bezels aren't actually as thin as they are on the Venue 7, then it's not as bad to hold one side or the other. It's still, like, you're still kind of resting your thumb on that edge when you're holding it, so I probably wouldn't hold it with one hand across that landscape for too terribly long. But in portrait, it is so nice to hold just by that giant bar on the side. The speakers sound pretty nice. It really surprised me. I am not a huge fan of big tablets, and I haven't put this thing down yet.
So this is definitely leaning more towards kind of the Surface way of doing things, where it's lends itself more to that keyboard experience, but then it can also be a tablet. It really seems like when you did your little Periscope unboxing of it, it comes out of the box connected together like a laptop.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously with that, that big cylinder down at the bottom, and this full-featured keyboard experience, it seems like it's more of a laptop that turns into a tablet rather than the other way around.
Yeah, I mean, this is basically a small Dell laptop that runs Android, and so far it's not bad. I have noticed that it takes a surprising amount of time to rotate from landscape to portrait when I disconnect and turn it. Now, once it does, it's fine, but it clearly prefers being in landscape.
Yeah, I used it at Computex last week. We had similar issues with that. The unit there, you would undock it from the keyboard dock and you would lift it around like this, and it would take a while to kind of work out what had happened and just readjust itself.
Right, because it's probably because it's not wanting to rotate ever to portrait when the keyboard is attached.
Right.
So you disconnect from the keyboard, then it goes, oh, I'm in tablet mode, and then, rotate.
Already run into a couple of apps where it forces the UI portrait.
Right. Then you have the Android tablet, big screen tablet problem where apps just kind of suck in big, on big tablets and landscape.
You've got the Nexus 9 and its keyboard there too. And I wasn't crazy about it at all back in November when I used it, so I ditched it on you. I mean, just side by side, even in your brief time today, how's that look?
The Dell keyboard is way more comfortable. Yep. There's a lot of spacing in between the keys that's really nice. The Nexus keyboard is functional, and I say that coming from... I used to use one of the mini keyboards with an iPad mini for a while. So this is better than that, which was a really awful experience. But the Dell keyboard feels like an actual ultra-thin keyboard, like something I would expect on an ultra-thin laptop.
And you have the trackpad and palm rests means that you could actually use this kind of as a laptop. You know, that's the issue with the mobile keyboards is you have this little keyboard with no palm rests.
Right.
So you're going to have to set it on a table anyway because, you can't really do this hovering hands thing when you're trying to type. So that's huge.
Russell, have you found the hinge on the one you're using? Like, again, using it last week at Computex.
It is.
I found the hinge, it's almost like there's some give between tilting it and it actually, turning and closing the hinge. Same token, closing it and then trying to prize it apart to open it again. That was kind of awkward.
When I dropped it earlier and it kicked me out of the Hangout, that was because I was trying to pry it open just like you were just saying. That is a huge pain. Like every time it's completely closed, then I go to pry it open. It's because all the weight is on the top and there's no weight on the bottom. And that's just what happens when you do something like that. There was a Samsung laptop that came out right after the original Surface Pro that had the exact same problem. And it was a lot bigger. But, this is just it's not going to open very easily because all the weight is on the top. But once you get it open, I don't know. I don't think the hinge is too bad.
And the nice thing is it means you don't need to have a kickstand or anything like that.
Right, yeah. This is, it's a rigid hinge. Like, it holds at just about every angle you put it at without any give. There's a little bit of wiggle, but it's no more wiggle than you would get from your average laptop.
I mean, that really just seems like a way better design than having a kickstand or having a non-adjustable stand. I know that the Tab S 10.5, it's a non-adjustable stand. It's just a slot that you set the thing in.
Right. And, well, the Nexus 9 stand, it's kind of a kind of working around patents version of the iPad stand.
Right.
Which I've totally forgot. Like, I use that cover. That's what I have. I do not remember how to fold it at all.
It's just like the Kindle Origami stand.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I'm only a day into it.
Working around patents.
I'm pretty sure that... if you wanted an Android laptop that like was an actual laptop that you could use for productivity, this is probably the closest you're going to get.
So you actually got me excited about this thing.
I don't like big
tablets, but
I don't dig big tablets. Like the Venue 7, like really that's like the edge of what I use for big tablets. And even like for reading, sometimes that tablet isn't the most comfortable thing. But I really like this thing so far. I'm really looking forward to spending the weekend with it. I'm going to read so many comic books. Because you can just hold it by that side, and then like the that huge screen is going to be perfect for reading comic books, I think.
Is this one Atom-based as well?
This is. It's the same hardware on the inside as the Venue 7. It's the same processor. It's even got the same three cameras in the back, 2 gigs of RAM, 32 gigs of storage on board. It has a little pin slot on the side that I haven't opened yet. It looks almost like a SIM slot, but I haven't checked to see whether or not it's a SIM slot.
I bet it is. The 7 has one, right? I think.
I thought that was for storage, but I could be wrong.
Oh, you said SIM slot, yes. I don't know.
No time like the present.
I just want to say, with Dell's naming convention, we're talking about the 7. I think the name is actually the Dell Venue 8 7000 series.
Oh, yeah.
It depends on who you ask. 7000 series or 7460.
Yeah, the Dell Venue 7 is like a forgettable, crappy Jelly Bean tablet from about 3 years ago.
Or was it 7640?
It looks an awful lot like a SIM tray.
Yeah, it does.
I might have to shove a SIM card in here and see what happens. If this thing has LTE, that would be even better.
And what's the... So can you only buy them together as a combo, or do you
buy the tablet
separate?
When I went to Dell's website to check it out this morning, it didn't look like they sold them separately. This is a package deal for $450.
Wow.
Just horrible.
And it's like,
that's not bad. It's the nice screen, good processor.
I mean, I would probably... I haven't used one long enough to decide one way or the other, but I would probably pick this up over that cheaper Surface.
Yeah, which is $500 without a keyboard, I think.
Yeah.
I talked with Intel for a little bit in San Francisco a few weeks ago, and they're excited about all their stuff coming out. So, just saying.
This one's a good one. I love the keyboard. It's such a cool idea. I give them serious props for the way the keyboard works. There's especially there not being a battery. So tired of needing two micro USB cords when I'm like trying to use a tablet for something like that.
Well, and like the keyboard has long battery life, obviously much longer than the tablet, so they're not on the same charging schedule. So your tablet's full, and then your keyboard's been on for 4 weeks or whatever, and now it's dead. That's annoying.
Dell knows keyboards, right? They've had enough practice making these things over the years.
Yeah. I have. I definitely dig it, though. The speakers aren't terribly bassy, which is a weird complaint to have about crappy laptop speakers or tablet speakers, but... I don't know. I don't think they're quite as bassy as the Venue 8 7000.
Oh, okay. Well,
more testing is required.
I look at the website and it looks like they do sell it separately.
What's the price for it separately?
So it actually is. It's $500 without, or $630 with. So it's the same price as the.
Oh, did I completely mess that up?
So it's the same price as the new Surface 3, which is like basically the same size. They charge $130, maybe $150 for the keyboard. And that's what I see on the site anyway.
I don't need more stuff, but I kind of want one.
I'm looking at it now. Like, that's really cool.
Okay, yeah. So the 32 gig version is the one that I have, and that's $549.
But you can only buy the keyboard bundled with it with the 16 gig version.
Well, that's not what I have. I have a 32 gig version.
Well, don't read in too much into that, because we didn't buy this. It's a review unit, so who knows what they sent us. And it's not the first time they've changed. They changed the 7-inch bundle recently, too. So.
Oh, you're right. Yep.
Yeah.
I mean, this definitely is like a going rate for that kind of thing. I mean, the Nexus 9 is basically the same thing. You're talking about $400 plus another $100 for a keyboard. Surface 3 is about the same. All these convertible Windows tablets are in the $400 to $600 range as well.
That tray is an SD card slot. That totally looks like a SIM card.
Sorry.
That is
sorry.
Bad form. Yeah. It tricked me. But it also means that you can expand this thing to 512 gigs because it supports SDXC.
Sweet.
So you can put quite a bit of storage on this thing.
It's just funny when I look at it now, it looks so dopey without the keyboard attached, but with the keyboard attached, it's super sleek and futuristic. Kind of funny how that works.
Funny how that happens.
Yep.
Okay, let's go answer some questions, because people have been pushing them in to the Q&A.
You said you were going
to
do that.
So. Yeah, yeah. Hey, by the way, now that I think I have our new little podcast system fixed and rigged up, and I hope I don't want to jinx it, but I think this is going to sound so much better than it has before. I think it's probably maybe time to start taking voicemails again. So if you want to, and if you're still listening to us by this point, you are the hardcore and you are the people who will send in voicemails. Just record yourself. Do it on a phone app or on your computer or whatever.
Phone app is probably the easiest. So many voice recorders and microphones.
It sounds surprisingly good. And then just email them to podcast@androidcentral.com and we will put your question, your voice, on the podcast next week. So do that. I miss those a little bit. It was always fun. So with that, Doug asks, when will we start to see more phones and tablets and Chromebooks with USB-C? And do you think it will correspond with the time frame for the Android M release?
Yeah, October.
I think I'd be surprised if we saw anything high-end at IFA this year that wasn't USB-C.
I'm looking forward to buying all new chargers and having 2 million old cables that I can't use anymore. You know what? The most important cable I still have will be my mini USB cables.
Or those double-ended mini micro ones so you can use old cameras and crap.
Because I have like two old things that still use them.
It'd be a good time to go through that big bundle of micro USB cables, toss out the cheap and failing ones, and get new ones.
Andrew wants to know about the weight of the Dell keyboard, Russell. I always had issues with my old Asus Transformer 201 tipping over due to the keyboard being really lightweight compared to the heavy tablet, and I know exactly what he means.
So it the hinge stops in the back just before that becomes a problem. I haven't tested it, like, just kind of balancing it on my knee like I occasionally do with my MacBook, but sitting on a table, it definitely doesn't have that same problem. And it's important to remember that the weight on this is kind of when it's in landscape, it's kind of lower focused. It's closer to that central bar, so you don't have as much of the tipping problem there either because the center of gravity is a lot lower.
Cool.
Yeah, the battery is actually in the cylinder, not in a layer behind the screen, right?
Right.
Like how Lenovo does stuff. And
yep.
Yeah. Jason wants to know, where's Jerry? Jerry's at home. He's okay. He's just fine.
Internet issue.
They lost power today. In the woods.
On the mountain. The gateway that covers the whole of West Virginia's internet connection is gone now.
So hopefully we'll have him back next week. Chad wants to know, not a question, but maybe talk about Hangouts version 4. Hangouts at some point will be updated when it's out there.
Things that are not currently in the version.
Yeah. I mean, I saw one leaked out this week. Cool. Looks updated. Yeah. We'll mess with it more once it's actually out there. Travis wants to know, as a user of Google Play Music All Access since day one, we have jackets made, by the way, would I benefit from switching to Apple Music? I have zero Apple devices, but would Apple's music catalog be enough to get someone to change?
I mean, the music catalogs are pretty much comparable within a handful of songs.
Yeah, I think as far as differentiated for the streaming music service goes, the catalog is probably the least of your concern.
Keep in mind that Google is the new guy here when it comes to music stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, here's what I do if I don't find something on Google Play Music. I buy it on the other thing and I import it, which, perfectly legal to do, right?
If you don't have a problem with the authorization, deauthorization limits on Google Play Music,
which is most everybody but us,
which is a large number of people don't have that issue. I don't see anything in Apple Music that should make you run away. I mean, same price, same music collection, more or less, basically the same features.
I mean, I guess what we haven't talked about is the Beats 1 stuff, the live radio, which is something that Google doesn't really have in any way, shape, or form.
You're telling me they put internet radio in this app?
Well, they put internet radio, but it's actual live radio, as in live.
Yeah, they hired
radio
DJs, and they're going to have, Apple's going to have, like, their own radio station.
Look,
like
that's not unimportant. I mean, 90%
it's funny to make fun of, but
90% of people in the U.S.
I don't care about it at all.
90% of people in the U.S. still listen to terrestrial radio every day. I listen to satellite radio. I like hearing people. I mean, not all of them.
Yeah, you can go open TuneIn Radio Pro and listen to streaming live radio from anywhere in the world already. I don't think the fact that Apple's doing one radio station in its app makes any difference.
They're doing three.
It'll be interesting.
They're going to have three DJs for...
Three DJs for one station that just goes 24 hours a day. I mean...
But it's also, it's back to the point that we had earlier, it's native. It's built into, I mean, you're right, you can install TuneIn or you can install iHeartRadio or you can install a couple other things. But I mean, for iOS users, it's baked in. It's right there.
Sure, I understand that. I also understand that it's literally one station. And I think that it's nice to have that thing where you can just turn it on and have music going. And it's a reason why Pandora is still around and people like it. I don't think that that's a reason to drop Google Play Music to have one radio station in an app.
I'm going down to the bottom for the next one. Derek wants to know, can you ask Andrew, how do I get all the photos from the baby book my mom made me when I moved out to Google Photos? After all this great posts, it's the only photos I have left that aren't in Google Photos.
If it's a large baby book, you're going to want to have a service that takes those in, scans them at very high quality, and sends you a CD with all the pictures on it. Honestly, you're not going to want to buy a scanner that's of the high enough quality and spend multiple hours scanning those in yourself. There are a lot of services.
That doesn't work. I said, and don't try and take pictures with your phone.
Yeah,
I learned the hard way that doesn't work.
The best thing that's you're going to do is you're going to pay a dollar per picture or something like that. You're going to send all these to one of these services, and then they're just going to mail you a CD back, and then you can upload them. And then you'll have, you'll just have JPEGs of all these things that you can do whatever you want with.
Chad says, Apple's continuity isn't going to be local on iOS 9. T-Mobile announced that they will allow it via their network, so you can answer calls on your iPad at the office, even if you left your phone at home.
But all the data is local.
Yeah, I mean, I think you guys were maybe reading a little too much into that. And I mean, you guys, well, people can't see me pointing at these guys down here. But
well, I'm just taking them...
Yeah.
Honestly, if they say that nothing's leaving, but they know exactly where your devices are and what state they're in and how they can hand off data, I mean, that's a serious question you can ask them.
Let's see. Back to the top. Spotify is matching the family plan price. I'm sure Google will, too. That would be really cool if they did.
Google doesn't have a family plan.
Google doesn't have a family plan. So that'd be cool.
I could just give them any... number of my other devices. I haven't done that. My kid has the Amazon Echo in her room, though, so she can use that.
I want one.
Just because it's tied so into my thing. It's nice.
Amazon needs to get me an invite.
They need to sell the damn things.
Yeah, we need to kick the invite system. What is this, OnePlus?
Okay, what is everyone's thoughts on the Big M? That's kind of a big question.
As capital letters, it's one of my favorites.
It always reminds me of the mountains.
Yeah.
I'm just from using it on the Nexus 6 for the past couple of weeks. It's kind of obvious that the kind of release this is. There's less stuff in the current preview that is just straight up broken the way stuff in the L preview was.
Yeah.
We would never recommend people use a dev preview as their main... OS on their only phone, but it is easier to do that certainly than it was last year with the L preview. As far as M itself, whatever it eventually becomes, it's like we've already said, it's clearly just building on what was in Lollipop, like Google said, adding more stability, fixing bugs. I think the big user-facing thing is probably going to be Now on Tap. I think that's going to be huge, and if it works anywhere near as well as Google says it was going to work, then that's going to be probably as big a change going forward as Google Now itself was in Jelly Bean. But I think ice cream sandwich to Jelly Bean is the right analogy. That is that kind of jump where they take a very big change in Android in Lollipop and build on top of that with a new platform version, but what is very much stuff layered on top of a more polished version of the previous release.
Ashish has a question for Russell. I'm confused by your Doze comments. This is one of the features in M. I have Android M on my Nexus 5, and I put it next to me every night, not on the charger, to test Doze, and I get all the notifications, etc. Even my podcast app downloads at 4 a.m., and I see the same battery benefit.
Cool. I don't see any of that, so Turns out the developer previews are weird.
Fair enough. I don't know. Yeah, I'm sleeping.
It's supposed to only pull down everything if it's charging. Based on how they explained it.
Yeah.
And it could just be that you're only noticing that because when you look happens to be when the interval occurs that it pulls all the stuff down. And it isn't an exact science of when it starts to do this, right?
Well, and
also, more to the point, you have your notification tones let you know what's happening at 4 o'clock in the morning. How do you live?
That's
Do Not Disturb was like a life-changing event for me.
Yes.
In Android.
Yeah.
And the idea of... I was thinking back
to the old days. It's just, wow.
Is that you continue to get important information while also letting the phone sleep more often. So,
yeah.
I mean, it's designed more for tablets than phones, right? A tablet is a device that is more likely to spend an entire day off charger just sitting there doing nothing than a phone. Mm-hmm. If you do that with a phone, chances are you just forgot to charge it at night.
Andrew asks, after the Virtu review, I started thinking, do you guys think there's a chance we might start to see more very high-priced, as in $1,000 to $1,500, phones and tablets in the market for more premium gaming laptops? After all, the S6 Edge can break $1,000 if you really try.
Well, I mean, the last handful of Samsung flagships have broken $900 to $1,000 anyway, because they're just high-end electronics and they have markups and they're expensive. But I think that if you're talking about $1,000 to $2,000, you know, he's talking about like gaming laptops to a high-end tablet, that's a different situation than a $9,000+ phone, which just breaks into the super luxury realm, whereas a $2,000 gaming laptop is very easily justifiable for a lot of people. So I'm not sure we're going to see too much of that, because there's way more room for differentiation in the gaming laptop or laptop space than there is in tablets and phones in terms of performance and things like that.
The two very different devices that people buy in different ways. Most people are still in the carrier-operated, subsidized world, whereas if you buy a gaming laptop, it's a major purchase, but it's something that you're very serious about buying. It's something that you pay X amount up front. You're used to doing that because that's the way hardware purchases work. Whereas you buy a phone, you buy the device and also service to go with it.
We're also talking about a phone that has a literal precious gem as a button.
That's true too.
Yes. Yeah.
Blake wants to know, could you see Google doing a Netflix-esque service with music, i.e. $20 a month for unlimited music and TV and movies? No. It's just too many services and lawyers. No.
Yeah.
Right?
Tell me. I'm sure they could work on the rights to get you X amount, a certain subset of their catalog of TV shows and movies for a certain price. I mean, that's why Amazon has streaming and streaming media, and that's why Netflix has streaming media. And, we've seen how tough the rights are for TV with Hulu. They have a lot of different restrictions and things like that, and the pricing is a little funky.
But, and enjoy even more parts of Google Play being siloed away behind that five device limit.
Absolutely.
We have enough problems in Google Play movies right now where you can rent movies in HD, but you can't buy them in HD.
Or vice versa, or there's only only SD versions, or the price on the HD rental is super high, like the rental is almost the same price as a purchase and things like that.
Yeah, so Google's got some stuff to work out. It's a long road. It's not impossible, but that's not something they're going to flip the switch on this year, I don't think.
Now, if they could do something, especially when you're talking about Android TV, if they could do something like Sling TV, where it's flat rate streaming live television from certain networks, that'd be cool. But there's not a big differentiator there. I mean, Google would have to make some serious deals to come out with something that's like way over the top.
I don't think Google is prepared right now to go into an all out war with the likes of Hulu, the likes of Netflix. Yeah, they're not anywhere near as strong in that area, and like you say, the deals to make that happen just aren't there yet.
Music was a cakewalk by those standards.
Mm.
At least the lawyers win.
The lawyers always win.
That's true too.
No matter who wins.
And with that, I think I'm going to stick a fork in it. With any luck, a very good sounding, sultry.
Like a tuning fork.
Like a tuning fork.
Ding! So what you don't see in Phil's contraption there is like the little mouse cage and the piece of keys and the guy diving down into the...
If you didn't see last week, this is what's going on. A very out of focus. Why is it out of focus?
Delicious.
There it is.
Wow.
So I've got this mixer on the side of my desk now.
You know what you're doing over there next to the desk.
What's that?
Almost look like you know what you're doing next to the desk.
Look, that's taken a week of work, and it was killing me last weekend because like I brought it all in here. I thought I had it working. It absolutely did not work right before the podcast, and now I think it's sort of working. It's all still sort of contraptionized because I'm actually recording on a PC that I threw back together this week.
Just don't touch anything until
is over. it's got all these knobs and switches. They have to be like knobbed and switched.
Like you're in a studio, like you got to be doing something.
It has faders. I got to fade things. I got to slide stuff. It's important to do. Yeah, I tell you, I mean, after being in the Twit offices a couple weeks ago and seeing all their stuff again, like it's amazing that, granted, those people went to school and, you know, get paid to do that stuff. But I just like pushing buttons. I don't know. Anyway, yeah, send us voicemails, podcast@androidcentral.com. We will play them on the air next week, maybe, I think. I did get Frozen to, like, play through the mixer earlier, so I know how to do
it. It changed Andrew's life.
It did.
I watched it happen.
Well, Andrew doesn't live with that stuff like you and I do. Neither does Alex. That's
true. No, I just have... I have two nieces, so I hear a little Frozen, not as much Frozen as Phil does.
Oh, Robert just had a question in the Q&A. Any info on Google's ad blocker? It's pay for what you want service from Google, and they apparently get back to the websites for the ads they block. Yeah, actually, I use it right now. They call it
Contributor.
Yeah, Google Contributor. You tell it how much money you want to give it, and then it's not that it's blocking ads. It's just instead of showing you an AdSense ad that goes through Google...
Right, it's not showing Google's ads, you should be clear. Mm. It's not blocking other ads that aren't served from Google.
Yeah.
And you can choose what it replaces it with, right? Like, I think last time you had pictures of cats or something.
Mine shows up as cats, which is a lot fun. And sometimes I forget about it. I'm like, why is there a cat? Oh, right. Okay, and you can pick and choose which sites you want it to work on. Like, I turned it off for AC just because I'm on Android Central so long. I don't want to waste part of my $10 on ourselves, and I need to see what our ads are anyway. So
it gives the money directly to the sites instead of showing the ads is the idea. And you choose how much money, and then it distributes it as you go through.
Yeah, here, let me see. Google.com/contributor.
It's something you have to sign up for, right?
Yeah, I got in... I don't know how long ago, about a month ago. So let's see, $10, 1,200 ads removed over the past week. Sites contributed to, iMore is on top, which makes sense because I have to go there a lot. And I've given them 50 cents. So it's not, I mean, look, it's not, I'm not giving all these people, like $10 each. Let's see who's anonymous sites. Whatever that is a total of 31 cents. XDA, 24 cents. Windows Central, 8 cents. Weather Underground, which I go to a lot, 6 cents. So, yeah, I mean, it's not a lot of money, but it's a cool little option. I like it. So, next week, we will be back. Jerry will be back, I hope. Do we have anything going on between now and then? I don't think we do. We're just kind of working on stuff, doing things, right?
Yep.
Cool. As we are every week, we are brought to you by ShopAndroid.com. Go buy things. Got G4 stuff coming in. That's super important. Awesome. I wonder, we need to do a poll or something and see how many people are using leather versus plastic. Right.
I don't mind the plastic as much as I thought I would.
Well, you're wrong.
I mean, I got leather, which comes from Korea, that I ended up buying at a stupid cost to get in Korea before my trip before. It's nice. I mean, it's not super nice. It isn't the kind of crazy sea change that I expected from the plastic. It still feels a little bit scratchy, a little bit plasticky. But it looks nice. I think the black leather is still by far my favorite, having looked at the brown leather a little bit more closely last week. It's something different. It makes the G4 into more of a special foe than it might otherwise have been.
The poll, by the way, needs to be how many people are using the leather G4 and how many people are wrong.
Exactly. Exactly.
I just stopped using the G4 altogether. That fixed it.
Go follow us on all the social things. We're still Instagramming it up. If you're not following us there, there's a great picture of Derek and the Virtu phone on there. You have to see it. We are periscoping as well.
Yeah.
Wow. I sound like an old, out-of-touch white guy when I say that.
Hello, fellow children.
As opposed to me actually being an old, out-of-touch white guy. Twitter, Google+. What other places do we do things? I think that's it.
AndroidCentral.com.
AndroidCentral.com. Always important. Go download our app if you have yet to do so. And that, I think, is that. Russell, Alex, Andrew, thank you guys.
Yay.
Everybody at home, thank you guys. Everybody in your cars, I hope we sounded better this week. Oh, wow, I'm excited. I can't wait to go edit this now.
Even if we don't, just tell Phil that we do, or it'll break his heart.
Fine. Hi, YouTube. How are you guys? All right, that's it. We will be back next week. See ya.
See you later.
Bye-bye.
That outstanding episode of the Android Central podcast was brought to you by QuickBooks Self-Employed. Keep your work and home lives and your finances separate with QuickBooks. Try QuickBooks Self-Employed and get 50% off by going to tryselfemployed.com/android.